chaos, squalor, decay, death. TV crime shows are full of it, but in reality, most of us can't bear to look at these things, and certainly not on a daily basis. We spend a lot of our lives cleaning and straightening and ordering, doing whatever we can to kind of avoid the disarray and darkness that's never really actually that far away. But some people, whether by choice or by circumstance, find themselves working amidst disaster and disorder. Sarah Krasnostein is the author of a biography called The Trauma Cleaner. And the trauma cleaner is a person whose name is Sandra Pankhurst. Now, Sarah met Sandra by chance and became intrigued by her. So, Sarah, who is Sandra Pankhurst?
So, Sandra is a trauma cleaner. For the last 20 years, she's run a crime scene cleaning business that also deals with many living individuals. But she's actually lived so many lives, and my work with her showed me that her career is maybe the least interesting part of this woman.
Well, it's a pretty interesting career, but yes, let's just tell me a bit more about her. So
yeah.
Sandra Pankhurst was not born, well, didn't start life with either of those names.
No, that's right. She was assigned male at birth, and she was adopted.
So she was born a boy.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And she was adopted into a fairly abusive home in West Footscray,
made to live Victoria, in the
Victoria,
inner west of Victoria,
that's correct,
in Melbourne, yeah.
in the early 50s, and she was physically excluded from the family home. The father had built a little shed out the back where she was made to live. She was malnourished, and the rest of the kids were inside the house. And
it sounds like a sort of horrible real life version of Harry Potter under the stairs.
Oh, well,
I mean, much, yeah.
It was a very difficult time for her. And, you know, she, in the late 60s, early 70s, really gave it a go in terms of doing what society expected of her, and married very young in her late teens, had two sons in quick succession, and, you know, all the time is struggling with this feeling of being different. I mean, she won't say, I felt myself to be a woman in a man's body, but she will say, you know, my whole childhood I felt different. And, you know, thinking back, this our society had no language for what it was to be trans or to want a transitioning to living as a different gender. And she was really feeling in the dark. So when she kind of, you know, took the steps needed to transition to living full time as a woman, she had to leave her family. She went to St. Kilda, was a drag queen, was a sex worker, went to Kalgoorlie and worked on Hay Street there, was one of the first people in Victoria, well, probably in Australia, to have gender reassignment surgery. So, you know, that's just her early life.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Many lives.
So now you met her at a conference for forensic support services.
Yes.
I mean, what was it that you – that's pretty interesting in itself. Anyway, we won't go into why you were there. But what was it that you sort of immediately found compelling about her as the subject, you know, that you ended up writing about?
Well, you know, I was there, and when I'm not writing, I'm a legal researcher, and so I wasn't there with my writer's hat on. I wasn't there, you know, looking for any type of story. It was just the physically arresting image of this gorgeous, tall, beautifully groomed woman sitting behind a card table, you know, touting her business to these criminal justice system stakeholders, playing this tiny screen of her before and after crime scene cleanups. And it was profoundly disturbing and profoundly beautiful all at the same time. It looked like a David Lynch still. And I just had to know more. So for my own curiosity, that's why I approached her, and, you know, that was the beginning of our time together.
So what is trauma cleaning?
Right. So I'd never turned my mind to this, but, you know, once anyone I speak to does give it, you know, a couple seconds of consideration, then we realize this has to exist. The police don't do their emergency cleanup. You know, firefighters don't do the cleanup. Emergency medical workers don't do the cleanup because, of course, they need to get on with their job. So trauma cleaning is these industrial cleaners that come in after a catastrophe to clean up. It really is this, you know, public service that they do, this very dirty, disturbing work. But what I was further surprised to learn is that many of their clients are actually alive. They're hoarders. They're people that live in severe domestic squalor, unattended deaths, so people that have either committed suicide or died alone. Totally outside our social net. So who comes in then to clean up after these people? And that's her bread and butter.
Now, you spent I think, about 4 years with Sandra, and you went out on a lot of her jobs with her. So tell me about the first one you went on with her.
The first one, I think the first one was always going to be, you know, very strange and disturbing, because this is not a world that I had any experience with. Or if I did, it was, you know, only at a remove through, you know, dry legal cases. It was an unattended death. A woman who was my age, so 35 at that time, had died of a heroin overdose and gone undiscovered for 2.5 weeks at the height of summer. So I went in with Sandra and her cleaners, and I got to see Sandra in action, readying this rental unit for its next tenant. And it was just, you know, it was a whole new world, but very much part of our world. So, you know, over the next couple of years, 7 jobs made it into the book, but I probably went on about 3 times that many. And I learned, again, something completely new and surprising to me, which was that these homes where people die alone, or they live in squalor, or they are severe hoarders, they don't discriminate. They're in every single neighborhood, regardless of, you know, socioeconomics or profession or intellect. And you'd see these certificates and diplomas on the walls, and really made me think, you know, there but for the grace of whatever you want to call it, go I or you or all the rest of us. And it was, you know, deep realization that these problems are the problems of human pain, and they're much closer to us than, you know, a show that's inherently exploitative like Hoarders would have us believe. It's just human pain at the end of the day.
So with those places that Sandra goes as a trauma cleaner, where there's been a death, but where there is someone who is seriously hoarding stuff. I mean, what is she doing there, and how is she with the person?
Right. So it looks, it takes various guises. Sometimes it looks like a negotiation. Other times it looks like just friends sitting down having a chin wag. She goes in there, and she has, you know, as you mentioned, I've spent 4 years researching and writing this book, and, you know, in fairly close contact with her. And I could see for myself that she has total integrity in every situation. So she's just herself making chit-chat and small talk, whether it's, you know, her local member for parliament or a woman that has really not come outside of her house for a decade. And she'll talk about the weather, she'll talk about the traffic, and she'll put a hand on the shoulder. And it is, and it's an inherent kind of...
Amid this squalor and stench.
Exactly.
And
it looks like
chaos.
The world is falling in, and she is just on this even keel. And so she knows exactly how far she can push these people without distressing them. And she'll negotiate over every piece of paper, even if we're surrounded by literally 2 decades of newspapers. She will, you know, respect them in their dignity and ask for permission for each, you know, thing that she's throwing out. And it really gives them a boost, and it's really beautiful to witness.
Well, Sandra inhabits this world that most of us really turn away from, I guess, you know, the mess and the chaos and filth and decay and death. Did you get a sense of her, I don't know, understanding something fundamental about life through being so thoroughly in this world of disarray?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's so many kind of pearls of wisdom that she just, you know, will drop without realizing it. You know, she'll go into these places and deal with these people. And to the extent that you can make these comparative assessments, she has survived as bad episodes of trauma as many of them, if not worse in certain cases. Yet she's the one who goes in to help them. And so she'll always say, you're as strong as your mind. She tries to impress that upon them, which, you know, is not the solution to very intractable problems. But still, I think it's of benefit and has its place. So she's, you know, you're as strong as your mind. Everyone deserves compassion because I deserve it too. That's, you know, so I think in her, you know, lack of judgment and in her kindness, she's giving back to herself, who was deprived of that kind of dignity so many times throughout her life. And that kind of your today and your future is really what you choose, what you make of it. So the past is something that happens happened to her and that happens to all of us. But she'll say, you know, things are always getting better. I always have another chance. So I feel like, in a sense, it's given me this wonderful kind of secret power that I can call on what Sandra would say about a situation, you know.
This is Life Matters with Amanda Smith and Sarah Krasnostein, who's the author of The Trauma Cleaner. It tells the story of Sandra Pankhurst, who before she was a trauma cleaner was a husband, a father. She was also a steel worker and a sex worker and for a time a funeral director as well. So I guess, you know, you've talked about what Sandra's own sort of traumatic upbringing, maybe how that relates to her becoming a trauma cleaner. I mean, is it about, for her, is it about imposing order?
Yes, very much so. I think, you know, she's always had, while she's had these vastly different careers, she's always been of service to others and always happy to leap in where others might shy away.
But I'm also wondering if it's imposing an order on her own chaos.
Absolutely. I think by going in there and being able to clean out these houses and, you know, she'll go the extra mile and she'll decorate with, you know, furniture and pillows and, you know, homewares that she collects on her own. And she'll just go the extra mile to create these beautiful environments. And in a sense, when she's making a home for others, she's making a home for herself in the world, making a place and a role for herself in a way that she was denied, you know, many times in the course of her life. So that's been wonderful to watch. And in a sense, I feel lucky that I got to do something similar for her because she'd had so many episodes of trauma in her life that she had trauma-induced memory loss. We know that trans people have higher rates of self-medication, particularly when she was growing up in the 60s and 70s. So the impact of alcohol and drug addiction had, you know, taken away her memories. So in writing the story of her life, you know, I got to kind of do a trauma clean for her and reveal the person underneath, you know, all the clutter of the pain.
Did Sandra have any reservations about you writing her story? I mean, she's still alive. She's actually been very sick, but she's still alive and possibly listening to you talking about it.
Yes, I hope so. No, she had no reservations. I was lucky enough that, you know, she spoke to me from the beginning with complete candor about what she could remember.
Did you have any reservations about writing her story?
I did. You know, I was nervous that I would be able to do it justice. I was nervous, you know, as a writer of nonfiction about how to handle these problems of memory loss. But at the end of the day, I was confronted with a woman who was literally bursting with the story of her life. And there's a Maya Angelou quote that I will definitely butcher right now, but it's something, there's nothing as painful as a story untold. So if, you know, when we think back when she was growing up, the consequences of her being honest about her experiences and who she was were literally life-threatening. And now that she was ready to tell her story, the sadness was that she could no longer remember parts of it. So while I was called, you know, to try my best to do it justice, and that was nerve-wracking, I had no reservations about, you know, trying to do the best I could by her.
So what ultimately then is Sandra's story about for you? I mean, is her work as a trauma cleaner, you know, sort of metaphoric, emblematic?
Yeah, I think it's kind of a story about coming to voice, finding her, finding pride in who she is and being terrified to be honest and seen in, you know, 3D and doing it anyway. So I think it really is this kind of a strong notion of bravery, what it is like to be known, what it is like to feel empathy and compassion for someone, what it is like to be resilient. I think that those are all the themes that came out in the end, I hope.
And Sandra Pankhurst's story is told quite beautifully, I have to say, and very movingly in The Trauma Cleaner, One Woman's Extraordinary Life in Death, Decay and Disaster. The author is Sarah Krasnostein. Sarah, it's great to meet you and vicariously through you to meet Sandra too. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.